The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening. We could take maybe a few minutes to take some questions. Some of you have now been meditating at home and practicing with the instructions. It might be a nice way to begin to see if you have any questions or comments or reports about your meditation so far. And then we'll start with a meditation in a few minutes.
Last Wednesday, I forgot to mention that when I was doing the second part of the meditation, that you said to feel the right hand, that was okay. Feel the left hand. I didn't feel the hand itself, but I felt the warmth of the hand over my leg. I felt the warmth of the leg on the my hand on the right hand. But I didn't feel the hand itself. It was like it was a white hand and nothingness there. Just the left hand to here like this, to that point. And that was it. Which is interesting.
So with the eyes closed, the hand is a concept. And if you are not operating on the conceptual level, if your mind is calm and relaxed and you're not having ideas, then there is no hand with your eyes closed. I mean, of course there's a hand, but the direct experience is not of a hand. The direct experience is of warmth, coolness, pressure, vibration, energy. There are particular sensations that make up the experience. And those experiences, with the eyes closed, those experiences will use our memory and our associations to associate that with a hand. So your experience, you were probably calm enough, centered enough, quiet enough, that you weren't doing that, and so the handness of the hand disappeared.
Also, I was meditating for 20 minutes almost every day, and sometimes I feel that I'm gone.
That you're gone?
Yeah, I'm not thinking, I'm just breathing in and out, and then I have to do something to know that I'm alive. So wow. I do like this with my toe.
Okay, wait.
I say, I'm there.
You're there. Good. I'm glad you're here. And we haven't lost anybody yet. But it's an experience that some people can have when they get very calm and settled. It doesn't have to happen this way, but very calm, peaceful, settled. Probably you're that way. That the whole sense of the body can disappear, and you can feel like you have no body at all. And I've opened my eyes to make sure that I was still here. And in fact, I'm still here. That part of the mind that constructs the body is not operating. It's calmed down. And so it feels like the body's just kind of disappeared. And it's usually a very pleasant experience. If you're not used to it, it's disorienting at first. Sometimes it's frightening because, like, oh boy, you know, are we ever going to come back? Have I become a ghost? But everyone comes back. I mean, you didn't go anywhere. So it's, yes.
I had a similar experience. I'm wondering if it's almost as if you're not, as she said, not there. It's almost as if you're asleep. And then suddenly you become aware, you don't know how long you've been in this state. Is that the goal to get there? Or is it the process to get there? Or...
Certainly the goal isn't to put yourself to sleep.
That's what it sort of feels but like. Yeah. I'm obviously not asleep because I'm sitting up.
Yeah. So I mean, it's possible to get in very sleepy, almost sleep-like states. I mean, I've nodded off sitting up here. So it's possible to fall asleep. But a deep meditative state is one where, in a sense, the body is as at rest as you are when you're sleeping, but the mind is alert. And it's some people associated with sleeping. And it's very nice. It's not for Buddhist meditation, the goal isn't to have a nice, relaxed meditation. The goal is to see clearly. It's nice to have that, but the goal is to help us, when we come out of that experience, to use that experience as a reference point to help understand how we don't have to reappropriate or repeat the kind of clinging and grasping and tightening and tensing that is often part of our life that was lost or put aside as you go into those deep states. And isn't the deep state that's important, but what it teaches us about how it's possible to be relaxed. And for people who live our life always being tense, it's just like normal, right? Isn't it like, I don't even know I'm tense. It's just like, you know, this is the completely ordinary way of being, right? Always tense. But once you've had an experience of being deeply relaxed, that deeply relaxed, you have a very different vantage point to understand what is tension, what is stress. And there's much more tension and stress in people's lives than most people realize. So it's when you come out of it that the lessons are found.
Thank you.
Yes.
My experience is almost completely opposite. I've become very, very aware of how busy my mind is. But I'm feeling like the progress is, at least I'm aware that it's doing it. I feel sometimes like my head is waiting on the bedpost for me in the morning. You know, when I wake up, it's, Bob, come on, we got things to think about. You know, there's things to be, you know, you can't just be sitting there. So it's really helped me to see that part of myself.
So quite a contrast between these two reports. Right. What's very important, and you hear all this, is to realize each person will have their own way, their own... A big part of what mindfulness meditation is about is discovering, not getting calm and not being busy necessarily, but discovering how you actually are. And at different days, different times, different situations, you'll be different. Different people are different. And it's possible that that insight that you had to see that your busy mind is more useful than the one that she had. She just feels good, maybe. But you are learning something about how your mind operates. And so what I'm trying to say here, it's best not to compare yourself to others. Say, I should be different. There should be something else. Whatever your experience is, we meet it with mindfulness. And then you're doing the right practice. And I like to say that for people who, many people who begin meditation are new to it, the first insight is of progress is realizing the mind is out of control. And I think I might have said this, but it's better to know your mind is out of control than to have a mind that's out of control and not know it. So I know sometimes it's uncomfortable, but it's actually a great beginning. It's when you realize what you're up against, and you can try to kind of work with it. So maybe one more comment or question?
So my experience was, I think, kind of more similar to theirs in that it's not that you feel like you're falling asleep. I don't feel like I'm falling asleep. I think I'm even more aware of my existence. It's kind of like I'm not in my body. Like I'm this thing looking over my body. Uh-huh. And like I'm there and I'm thinking about it. But that's like this, like that's why I feel like I have to tap my toe too. Like,
so what was that?
I have to like do something to realize I'm still here. But it's not that I went into a sleepless state. It's kind of like to get back into my confinement.
Uh-huh. And you get back into your confinement. So for you, when you're mindful and calm, you feel like you're an observer, kind of a little bit outside.
Yeah.
And does that feel nice to you?
It's weird.
It's weird. Uh-huh. But one of the advantages of an experience like that is you don't identify so strongly with what's going on in the body and the mind and feelings. Many times people are so wedded to their body, to their feelings, to everything, they think that's who they really are. And it isn't that you're the observer now, but to be a little bit outside and watch and be a little bit removed, some people find it's very freeing. And then with time, what happens with mindfulness, it gets stronger, you get actually kind of fluid about where your attention, how your attention can operate at different times. And sometimes you can be, your awareness becomes kind of really, really big and feel like it can contain the universe. Sometimes it can feel like it's above watching. Sometimes you can feel like you're right in the middle of it, just right in the heart of it, kind of intimate and close. Sometimes you can feel like your hands are loving, soft hands that just come from underneath something that you're paying attention to and just gently feel it. Awareness is very fluid. Awareness is not a particular thing. It's because it has no shape, it has no form, it has, you know. So what it is can actually shift in our minds, in our mind. And so your experience was great. Okay, and so you all seem to, I guess, appreciate that. Those four of you spoke well enough. And some of you probably struggled. And I wondered, you know, I can't do this even. How many of you think, I'm not sure I can do this. This is too hard for me. Yeah, a few of you. That's also normal. You're right on track. And I wouldn't worry about it. I would just be mindful of that, mindful of those thoughts, those feelings, and don't get tripped up in them, those feelings and thoughts. That's the commentary. Remember I talked about commentary last week? You don't need to get involved in the commentary. Just recognize it's there, and then continue as best you can with the meditation. And probably today and next week, in particular, the things I'll say will help you with those things. One of the first lessons that most people need to learn when they meditate is patience. There's no, you know, to be in a hurry when you meditate is not. There was a satirical movie or piece done about Spirit Rock. Spirit Rock's a meditation center I teach in up in Marin. And someone went there and videoed a satire. And this really, I don't know, pompous guy who's on retreat, arrogant guy, super spiritual, arrogant guy who's on spirit retreat. And in the middle, you know, in the middle of the retreat, he calls his girlfriend up. And he's telling, I'm on this retreat. And the teacher said we had to meditate for 45 minutes. I nailed it in 10. You know, that's like going through, you know, you know, playing a piano sonata or something, and the point is to get over it as quickly as you can. The first person through it wins. You know, you don't have music. Okay, so welcome back. So this is the third week of our mindfulness meditation class. And today we're going to explore the world of emotions, feelings, which are a very important part of human life. And occasionally people have some idea that Buddhists are supposed to become emotionally flat and not have emotions. There's no place in Buddhism for emotions. But in fact, all emotions are allowed and included in the field of mindfulness. Mindfulness itself does not judge any emotion that we're having. Mindfulness allows for what's there. Your wisdom might decide that it's not the right time to be angry with your boss. So you might want to hold off your anger in certain situations. But in mindfulness meditation, there's no need to inhibit, repress, hold back any emotion you have. What we're trying to do is to learn how to wisely be mindful and present for the emotions that is going on. So in talking about emotions, before we do a meditation, the Buddha gave a wonderful story or analogy. He was meeting with some students and he said to them, if an archer comes along and strikes and you know, pulls the bow and strikes an arrow into another man, does that man who gets hit by the arrow, does that hurt? And so the answer was, of course it hurts. Then the Buddha said, if that man then takes another arrow and strikes the man with a second arrow, would that hurt even more? Of course, it would hurt even more. And so then the Buddha said, the first arrow is what life does to you. The second arrow is what you do to yourself. So, for example, if I'm walking down the street here and I trip on the sidewalk, that's the first arrow. You know, it's unfortunate. I trip, maybe I hurt my knee or something. That's the first arrow. It happens. We can't avoid those kinds of things necessarily. The second arrow would be, Gil, you're a klutz. You're like the worst walker ever walked down Birch Street. You're an embarrassment. You're supposed to be a mindfulness teacher. You should know better. And I hope no one noticed. And I'm adding arrow after arrow on top of it. Or if I'm sitting meditating and my mind is distracted today, it's scattered, and my mind wanders off a lot. That's just wandering off. Maybe it's uncomfortable to have it wander off and be restless, but that's the first arrow, the discomfort. The second arrow would be, I'm really bad. This is terrible, or this, you know, or I'm gonna get back at the Buddhists. They just, you know, you know, they put me in this difficult situation. I'm so uncomfortable. Someone has to pay for this. And not only is that a second arrow to yourself, but now you're sending arrows in all directions. So I think you get the idea. So there's many first arrows that just come along with being alive. The Buddha had a bad back. Isn't that encouraging? He's supposed to be this wonderful world leader. Everything's supposed to, you know, world leaders, religious leaders are supposed to be perfect, right? And, you know, have everything made and just float in the cloud. And the poor guy had a bad back. You know, sometimes he couldn't teach because his back hurt so much he had to lay down. That's the first arrow. It happens. The second arrow is what you do with it. Now, emotions can be of both kinds. Emotions can occur in their own way and for various reasons, but there are also some emotions which are called reactive emotions, which belong to the world of the second arrow. It's what we add to this, on top of it. When we do a mindfulness meditation, we don't necessarily say any of it's wrong, but we're just going to be mindful of how it's actually playing out. So, for example, if I'm walking down the street, trip, that's the first arrow. I hurt myself. The second arrow is, Gil, you're a klutz. The third arrow would be, I'm not supposed to think I'm a klutz. Stop that. You're supposed to be a good Buddhist and not have a second arrow. So, you know. So that's the third arrow. Fourth arrow, you know. And the sad thing is many people live at the 114th arrow. The generations just keep building and building. We react and react and react. So we're even lucky. We're lucky if we get down to the basic, the first arrow even. So with that, let's try meditation. So put yourself in a comfortable, alert posture. And close your eyes. And then with your eyes closed and sitting here, check in with yourself and notice how you're feeling. What's your emotional state or mood or general state that you're in? How are you feeling? Tired, energetic, eager, trepidatious, worried, peaceful. Happy, sad. Amused. Serious. So how are you now? Just hang out with that a little bit. Notice how you are, how you're feeling. Calm, restless. And as you notice how you're feeling, can you notice what your attitude is towards that? Are you okay with being the way you are, or do you have judgments or ideas, feelings about feeling that way? Sometimes the mood or the emotion that we're in becomes a filter through which we are mindful. So it colors our ability to see clearly what's here. So then to begin the meditation, take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Breathing in deeply so you feel a connection to your body. Feel the torso, the rib cage stretch and open. And as you exhale, relax, soften. Taking a deep breath, one more deep breath. And then exhale, relax, and return to our normal breathing. And then notice, go through your body a little bit, and notice if there's any place of holding in your body that you might be able to relax or soften. Maybe starting with your forehead and brow and eyes. Letting your eyes rest in their sockets. Some people find it helpful if they're staring with their eyes, even with their eyes closed, to let the eyes rest back in their sockets, or to imagine the eyes are looking backwards, resting. It's helpful to soften the jaws. And to soften the shoulders. Maybe as you exhale, let the shoulders get a little heavier. And it can be helpful to soften the belly. Let the belly hang forward. Some people find it helpful to unbutton their belts so the stomach feels freer. And then within the body, as part of your physical experience, notice how the body experiences breathing. Feel your breathing. Noticing the effect breathing has on your body, in that your chest moves, your belly moves, rib cage expands, contracts. There are sensations, perhaps as the air goes in and out through the nostrils. And there's a rhythm to breathing in and breathing out. See if you can tune in or align yourself with that rhythm to stay in the present moment. And every time you exhale, whenever you need to, let go of whatever you're thinking about, whatever your concerns are, so that you can begin fresh with the beginning of the inhale. And it's completely normal the mind will get involved in thinking. But try to stay alert enough to catch that. And when you do notice it, without any comments, gently begin again with your breathing. The end of the exhale is a little bit of a letting go. See if you can just be there for that, whatever letting go in the body that's part of breathing out. The releasing. Notice if there's any subtle commentary or judgments, evaluation about how it's going. And if possible, put those aside in favor of being closer, more intimate with breathing, breathing in and breathing out. Now, you can stop paying attention to your breath. And now check in with yourself again to notice how you're feeling. What's your emotional state now? What happened to the emotions you had before at the beginning? Are they the same? Have they shifted? Are you calm, restless, content, impatient? Curious, bored? Happy? happy, sad. Very quietly, recognize how you're feeling. Perhaps by, in a very quiet, subtle whisper in the mind, naming it for what it is. Calm, restless, happy, sad, whatever it is. Acknowledge how you are. And notice if there's any commentary or second arrows. And then see if you can recognize where in your body the emotion you're having resides. There's a teaching that all emotions manifest someplace in the body as sensations. Some part of the body gets activated. Is there some place in your body that you associate most with how you're feeling right now? And if there is, gently bring your attention to that part of your body and just feel what is there. Feel it as if it has permission to be there. And notice what happens as you watch the place in your body where some emotion might reside or where it's most felt. And then come back again to your breathing for a few more minutes. Maybe to reestablish the connection to your breathing, you can take one or two deeper breaths. And as if the breathing is in the middle of the universe, middle of your life, just sit there in the middle and just breathe for a few minutes here. And then to end this sitting, once again, take a couple of deep breaths, feel your body, and when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So people have many different relationships to their emotional life. Individuals can have different relationships, different emotions they have, or can have general policy towards all emotions. And, they're on one end of the spectrum is the people who, don't believe in emotions, or don't, prefer not to have them, or just ignore them entirely, or don't even know they have emotions because they're just, in their head a lot, in their thoughts. On the other end of the spectrum are people, it seems like that's all they have, is emotions. And everything is processed and understood through their emotional life. And thoughts, what are thoughts? There's no head at all, in a sense. And emotions are the be-all and end-all. And some people have manifestos of their beliefs around emotions and how important it is to express them and share them with everybody. And some people are frightened of their emotions. Some people, certain emotions are considered bad. Expression emotions was considered inappropriate in some families growing up or in some cultures. It seems like certain emotions are not really allowed. And other emotions are allowed. And so you have to kind of figure out which ones are okay to have and which ones not okay to have. People have been hurt a lot in their lives. And so opening up to emotions, opening up to certain kinds of emotions, or even opening up that capacity to be sensitive enough to feel emotions is shut off because they don't want to be hurt again. And so they close up. And so there's a lot of different relationships people have with emotions. And what we're trying to do in mindfulness meditation is when there is an emotion, whatever it might be, to let it be there very simply. Not be for it and not be against it. Not have some idea that emotion's great, just let it, let's, celebrate. But also not have the idea that this is wrong, I shouldn't have this emotion, I'm supposed to get rid of it as quickly as I can. The idea in mindfulness meditation is a safe place, appropriate place, to let your emotional life come up, whatever it might be. For some people, that's a huge relief to finally have a place that can be that way. For some people, it's frightening or disturbing because they don't have to, doesn't make any sense given how they've been living their life. They don't have to face certain, some people don't want to face certain things because it might challenge their marriage even. If I look at that, if I allow that to come up, uh-oh. I better keep that back in the basement. But when we allow whatever is there to be there, a number of things can happen. The most important one for us is we start seeing clearly. This is an insight practice. So we want to learn to see clearly what's actually going on. What makes us operate? What makes us tick? What is the human life like? To see it clearly. As we learn to see it clearly, we also learn how to be free in relationship to it. So we're not being pushed around by our emotions or trapped by emotions or influenced by them unduly, but we see them there. So there might become a time where you get really angry. And maybe the fact that you have the ability to recognize the anger, be present for it, allow for it in a certain kind of way, and be free, means that you don't act on the anger and make things a lot worse than they need to be. You're free of the anger as it comes through you. Or you might be afraid. And fear can often grip people and limit, inhibit their lives dramatically. But it's possible to be afraid and have such strong mindfulness you see you're afraid and you don't identify with it. So it doesn't have to influence what you do. You can decide what needs to be done. And you're not ignoring your fear or repressing it. you realize it's there, but you're not letting it inhibit. So there's this freedom that's possible with strong mindfulness that's very helpful for some people. Also, as we allow the emotion to be there, we start seeing more deeply into the ecology of our emotional life. Emotions are part of a big inner ecology of beliefs and thoughts and assumptions and identities and relationships to the world and ourself and attitudes, intentions. There's a lot of things that come into play. Memories, past experiences in life. And as we learn to open to emotions, we start opening up to the richness of our inner ecology, which is understanding more and more how we work and how we tick. And we start differentiating between different aspects. One of the very interesting differentiations to make when you get familiar with the world of emotions is the difference between reactive emotions and responsive emotions. These are not technical words, so don't hold me to it too much. But reactive emotions is when we act habitually, automatically in reaction against something or for something. So someone says something unkind and you lash out immediately. You get angry in reaction to them. Or you see something or some person who's really beautiful and you immediately want that. So desire, reactive desire might come up. The responsive emotions is when we're relaxed and rather than a emotion that wants us to do something automatically, react automatically, there's a emotion that wants us to respond, but there's no compulsion in it. So for example, compassion is a responsive emotion. There's no compulsion in compassion. But it's also in relationship to something happening, someone suffering, and that comes and we respond. There's certain happiness can be a responsive feeling. Joy can be a responsive feeling. Sometimes joy can be a reactive feeling. If you're really greedy and you win the California lottery, it might not be wise to joy. Or someone comes and says, you're the best, whatever. And your arrogance and conceit get, blown up. You feel really happy then. We would call that a reactive happiness. But the responsive happiness is something that doesn't come from our clinging or attachments. It's beautiful to come that way. So as we begin looking more deeply into the world of emotions, we start seeing there are different kinds of emotions, and the emotions we have affect us differently. And as we see how they affect us, we can be wiser about what we allow to affect us and what we don't allow to affect us. We have more choice with it all. And those which are not useful to act on, we have more choice. We say, I'll just leave that alone because I see it so clearly. So it's not automatic that you can do this, but as the mindfulness gets stronger, there's more and more choice, there's more and more power, more and more overview of what's going on. So we're not in the middle of it in such a way that we're just pushed around or act compulsively. That makes sense? So now I'm curious, some of you, what was it like to do that meditation, especially in terms of the beginning and the end, looking at your emotions or feelings? What happened and what did you discover? And what happened? And also, what happened when you looked? Could you find some place in your body where that emotion was?
I noticed that my emotions at the beginning, they were a lot stronger than the second time. The second time, I was more relaxed, so the emotions were more at ease.
Uh-huh. Were they the same emotions?
Yes, same. Because I felt, when you asked what we felt, I felt a contentment. But my contentment was kind of hyper a little. And then after a while, I felt the same emotion, but it was still contentment, but it was more calm.
Calm, huh? Great. Wonderful. Thank you. Some over here? Yeah, someone else? Over in the back here.
I noticed this one that when I focused on the breath, I was seeing images. I was seeing a lot of images. And I was kind of like, you didn't mention images. Like, am I supposed to be seeing images? And then I sort of felt like it was a prelude to sort of dreaming, and then I did get a little sleepy. And then when I realized that, I thought I started getting anxious because I thought I was going to have to ask you a question about it. And so then that emotion was like, where is that? That was in my chest. It started in my chest, and then it kind of moved to my stomach. So I kind of went back and forth between seeing the images and then like worrying about having to ask about it.
And do you have any sense of the difference between ordinary way of you being worrying or being anxious and being anxious while you're feeling it in your chest and your belly? To feel it.
I don't know yet.
You know, huh? Okay, check it out, because it's very powerful to feel an emotion in your body. And I'll talk about that in a few minutes again. Now, in terms of images, I don't mention it often enough. I apologize for that, that some people have a lot of imagery when they meditate. Some people think more in images than they do in words. I think I'm mostly a word person, so that's I'm a little bit biased that way. So I don't always remember to mention. But from the point of view of meditation, images are just another form of thought. There's visual thought as opposed to verbal thoughts. And so the idea is to just treat them as thought and let go of them, recognize them. I'll talk about thoughts and images next week more. But imagery tends to also come stronger when the mind gets calm and settled. Even people who are not usual visual people will start having a lot of images sometimes when they get really calm and concentrated. It's kind of like you start getting into kind of dreamlike states even, hypnagogic states. And generally it's a good sign in that you're relaxed, but it's not so useful to stay there. So you want to try to, if it's because of kind of in a kind of sleep-like state, you want to up the level of energy in your system and make yourself more alert, because otherwise you'll drift off. So one more. Two more.
So when you asked us to figure out what kind of emotion we're having, I found that difficult, and I found that difficult in the past trying to identify that. But I'm a pretty emotional person. I have very strong emotions. So it's not that I'm not having them, but can you comment on how to sort of determine what it is?
Well, it could be you have a certain idea of what an emotion is supposed to be. I remember there was a woman on a retreat many years ago, and she came to the teacher and she said, "I'm feeling really strange. I've never had this experience before. It's really strange." And the teacher said, "Well, go back and meditate for another day and look at it more carefully, and maybe you'll see what it is." So she came back the next day and says, "I figured it out. I've never had this before. That's why I didn't recognize it. I'm calm." So it could be just, it could be very, very subtle, the emotional feeling level that you have. It could be you're still calm or settled. It could just be settled. It could be just a very, very mild peacefulness. It could be, it would be something. And so maybe it takes a while to recognize what it is. The thing about in meditation, you'll see in a few minutes, you don't have to go searching for an emotion in meditation. We did an exercise. That's what I told you to do. But in meditation, you don't spend any time trying to figure out what's not obvious. Meditation is always about staying present for what's obvious. So when you have an obvious emotion, then we pay attention to it. But if nothing's obvious, don't worry about it. Some people have lots of emotions. Some people don't have a lot of emotions, and they're not repressed or anything. It's just kind of like more even-keeled people. And so you don't necessarily have to have a lot of emotions to meditate. But when the emotions are there, then we meditate with the emotions, which I'll talk about. Does that make sense? Is this helpful at all, or does it address your concern, or you want to try again?
No, I think that's helpful.
Okay, so last one then here, behind you.
I had a really strange feeling when you were guiding us into finding out where the emotions were residing. I felt them, and I know I always, my emotions are always right here. And when you guided us, I started getting really nauseous, and I felt like something had to come out. It was really, really strange. Felt like, oops.
Yes.
Then the second arrow came, and it was, oh no.
Yeah, not on our carpet. Yes, it definitely can happen that way. Mm-hmm. People carry a lot of emotions and a lot of issues buried deep inside, and they don't, you know, they're held down, they're covered over. And as we sit down and meditate, we're relaxing some of the covers that have over our lives, some of the ways things are held down. And there are old memories that might pop up, there are old feelings that might come up, unresolved issues, there could be traumas that have been never really dealt with properly, griefs that have never been finished. And so the unresolved feelings and emotions will, in meditation, will come up. And some of the times they're so strong that people do feel like they're going to be nauseous and throw up. It's not an uncommon thing. Sometimes there can be tremendous releases of energy in the system when these things come up as well. So the important thing to know is it does happen sometimes. It's not wrong or bad to have this happen. The technical Buddhist word for this is purification. So cleaning out in some way. And if you feel any time like that, you feel like it's too much, you can open your eyes, look around, take a deep breath. You don't have to stay in the middle of it if you feel it's too much for you. But if you stay, with it, the experience of purification, of resolving and finishing and emptying these things, is a beautiful thing. You can feel cleansed, and sometimes you don't necessarily know why. I mean, some of the things that might bubble up, like sometimes memories will come up, especially people relatively new to meditation. Sometimes memories will come that are long, you know, haven't had for a long, long time. And some of them can be difficult memories because they've been held back, but they also can be beautiful memories that we've forgotten or kind of been ignoring. And sometimes people remember some really nice feelings when they were kids. I've had that happen. When I started meditating, I remember, I think as meditation got more pleasant and calm, I remembered going to sleep at night, and this beautiful calm feeling I had going to sleep that my I called it, at the time when I was a little kid, I called it being on the edge of the pillow. I don't know, you know. And I said, I remember I had that edge on the pillow experience. I haven't thought about it for years and years and years. I remember early on in my practice, I was meditating at a Buddhist center, and I did a meditation session, and I felt all this despair bubble up. I never had so much despair in my life. And I thought, this is, you know, wow, you know, what's this about? And I held it down, I held the fear down. I wasn't going to, you know, blurt out and cry in the middle of the meditation hall. I didn't know what was going on. But when it was over, I went and found the teacher, and I said, I feel all this tremendous despair. And he looked at me and he said, sooner or later it has to come out. And that's like, I pulled the cork. And I went to my room and I sobbed for 20 minutes, very strong, strong sobbing for 20 minutes. And when it was over, I felt completely cleansed. And to this day, I have no idea what that was about. There was no association, no memory, no idea. I didn't add any second arrows. I didn't try to psychoanalyze myself. I was just happy to, the dam was down or the river was free and the river flowed and then it was empty and clean. So those things can happen. It won't necessarily happen, but it's a very, you get a sense, it's a very powerful practice to do this. This is much more than just, you know, let's try to get calm so I can work better or something. This is touching into deep aspects of our humanity, especially when we're talking about emotions today. So hopefully we'll do this, you know, you go into this part of your life with respect and care. So thank you for that. So I want to talk now a little bit about mindfulness of emotions, the particular way in which we do it here. So the heart or the center of gravity for the meditation practice is the breath. Because the breath is calming, centering, stabilizing, more often than not. It's very helpful. It also helps us get concentrated. It brings us into the present moment. It helps us to let go of thoughts and concerns and just come back to the breath. But when things are more compelling than the breath, and so you feel a tug, you know, something else in the present moment is kind of like pulling on you, saying, you know, over here. Then the idea is to let go of the breath and let your focus go to that other thing. So last week we talked about the body. When the body is pulling on you, the knees or the back or whatever it might be, we go and focus on that and feel it and be with it until it feels like it's well enough acknowledged or it's gone away, and then go back to the breath. So the same thing is true for emotions. If a strong feeling comes up that's more compelling than your ability to be with the breath, then let go of the breath and then do mindfulness of emotions. Let the emotions be the theme of your attention, the focus of what you pay attention to. So this is how we do it. So when we recognize there's an emotion, the first thing to do is to recognize we're having it. So sometimes that's hard to do. You can have it. Sometimes it's possible to have a strong emotion and not recognize it because you're not looking there. You have blinders on or something. But first is to simply recognize that it's there. The second aspect of this is to allow it to be there. Some people call this acceptance. You accept its presence there. It doesn't mean you're condoning it when you accept it or allow it. It doesn't mean you're judging it like it's good or bad. Allowing just means you make room for it so it's permission to be there. So you can see it more fully. So you don't need to interfere with it. You don't push it away or hold on to it. So that's a big training, because many of us have this pull-push relationship to our emotions. We have desires and aversions in relationship to it. So it's a training in mindfulness. Okay, can I just allow it to be there? If you can't allow it to be there, then the instructions are just notice that. And allow yourself to be someone who doesn't allow your emotions. Don't add more arrows. Just notice, right now I'm resisting this. Right now I hate the fact that I have this emotion. Right now I'm scared and I don't want to get closer to it. Just be relaxed, stay calm, and recognize right now I'm resisting. Right now I'm angry. This is how it is now. So the spirit of this meditation, or the approach of this meditation, whatever is happening, no matter what, is we kind of, in some kind of way, kind of step back and say, this is what's happening now. As opposed to, oh no, or oh good. It's all, just, this is what's happening now. So that's the allowing. So first is recognizing, then it's allowing. The third, which we find very helpful in these circles, is to name the emotion. There's a technique we use, that some people like using, called the mental noting, which is a very quiet little mental note or label that acknowledges what the emotion is. So happy, you'd say happy. Happy. You might say it a few times. Happy. Happy. If you're sad, say sad. Sad. Or if you're anxious, say anxious. Or if you're whatever it might be. You know, if you have an obvious, kind of easy label for it, name it. And that does a few things. It helps with the fuller acknowledgement of it. It's one thing to kind of know you're having some feeling, but if you name it, it's like you really recognize it's there. You've probably had the experience, someone's used that expression, I'm going to name what's in the room, and then everybody relaxes when it's named. Oh yeah, I kind of knew, but I didn't realize there was so much tension. So we kind of name. Or the ancient fables or fairy tales say that if you can say the name of the dragon loses its power. So emotions lose a certain power over us, and the power is the power of identification, the power of being entangled with it. Naming it, labeling it, is kind of like stepping back and recognizing it's there as opposed to being enmeshed in it. So you might experiment with this mental noting of emotions and see how that helps you. Be not so enmeshed or caught in it, acknowledges it, doesn't it? And sometimes a clear acknowledgement of an emotion can settle something about it. And then the third thing we do is investigate. So part of mindfulness, and kind of an element of mindfulness sometimes, is to look more carefully and get to know the experience. So investigate, get closer to it. And the way we do that with emotions, and one of the first and foremost thing we do, is to feel it in the body. All emotions are felt in the body. Though you might not be subtle enough to feel that, But so, for example, you know, there might be fear, and the shoulders are tense, and you feel the tense shoulders. There might be anger, and there's a, maybe tension in the jaw. Or there might be embarrassment, and there's kind of a butterfly or loose feeling in your belly. Or there might be happy, and you feel soft and warm someplace in your body. Or you feel content, and there's a different kind of softness and maybe warmness somewhere, or settledness in your body. And some people say, well, I don't feel it. You know, it's all over, they say. It's all over my body, whatever I'm feeling. Usually when people tell me that, I say, well, is it in your little toe? They say, no, not the little toe. And usually they say, not in the little toe. No, it's in the torso. Well, the torso is not everywhere. Now we're kind of, it's more specific. And then I say, well, is it in your back rib cage? No, it's not in the back there. It's here in the front. And now we've narrowed it down even more. And then, is it equally everywhere here in the front? No, it's mostly in the solar plexus or something, And some people need a little help to kind of, because somehow we're not used to getting close and feeling it. So to investigate it and find out where it is in the body. And this is very, very helpful with emotions, because a lot of emotions, especially reactive emotions, come with stories. We're often telling ourselves stories. There's ideas, commentaries, judgments about what's going on. And so, and often like difficult emotions, even nice emotions sometimes, are perpetuated through time by the stories we tell ourselves. Modern psychologists, researchers of emotions, are pointing out this amazing stuff that emotions don't last very long. A lot of emotions only last a few seconds. Strong emotions apparently don't last more than a couple of minutes. It's unbelievable, right? What happens is we renew it all the time. We renew it with our stories and ideas. It can seem like it's constant, but we're constantly renewing it and retelling ourselves a story. So I'll tell you a story. I was teaching retreat many years ago, and there was a woman on retreat who was had a lot of problems, a lot of psychological problems, very disturbed emotionally. A lot of difficult emotions. And I'd known her for some time. And then we were on this retreat together. And in the morning of that retreat, it was a beautiful, big meditation hall with big windows, and the beautiful sunlight was coming in. There was this really special meditation session where there was about 50 people there. And it was really, really peaceful. You could feel the peacefulness kind of palpable in the room. It was really quite something. And right after that session of meditation was when I was going to have my meeting with her to talk about her practice. We have one-on-one meetings and retreats. So I got up and went to my meeting room, and she came in right after me. And so, one, 2 minutes after the end of the meditation, we were sitting facing each other. And she could almost not speak. She was so peaceful, and I was so peaceful. We were both in this state. It was so beautiful. And I was so happy for her, like I'd never seen her this way. Nothing had to be said, nothing had to be done. She was just so peaceful, so peaceful. And so we acknowledged what was happening. And then she said, but it wasn't this way yesterday. Yesterday, and she started telling me about yesterday, and in front of my eyes, she recreated and morphed into a troubled person. She was telling the story how troubled she was yesterday. Yesterday's ancient history. Why not stay with the peace of today that she had? She told herself, she was telling the story, and she entered into that whole world. So story, the mind that tells stories is often what reinforces emotions. And so the trick with being mindful of emotions is how to be mindful for them without easily falling into the story connected to it. So it turns out one of the useful ways of doing that is to feel the emotion in the body. The body is not a story. And since emotions are always being processed through the body, if you can feel the emotion in the body, you're connected to the emotion, but you're connected to the emotion without too easily going into the story. And more importantly, when you feel the emotion in the body, there's something about feeling it in the body that allows the body to process the emotion, to unfold. The word emotion is very nice. It comes from the Latin word, The root is motion, which is our English word motion, and the emotion, is to go out. All emotions want to move out. All emotions are in process. All emotions aren't fixed things. There's no emotion which is a fixed, solid, stuck thing, unless we freeze around it. So like resentment is frozen anger. Charlie Brown had good grief, and I guess when he had bad grief, it was frozen grief, which some people do. They freeze around their grief. They hold on tight. So there's a number of ways in which we freeze around it because of our holding, our resistance. But in and of itself, emotions are processes that want to move and unfold over time. And there's something about dropping into the body and feeling the emotion in the body that starts giving room and space for the emotion to begin moving again. Partly because it's a story that not only can reinforce the emotion, but also can be a story that locks it and frees it. So, and the body is in some ways more neutral. It's a kind of simple place, it's in the present moment. So we recognize there's an emotion, so we feel that we have a strong emotion, we let go of the breath, and we, in a sense, turn towards it or fully relax and feel, oh, this is what's happening now, I'm having an emotion. And then see if you can allow it to be there. And you could have any emotion at all when you meditate, from our point of view. And I want to, some people feel like Buddhists repress anger. And you don't have to, I don't know the detail of that now, but there's a reputation that some Buddhists have. Because they're supposed to be kind, nice people. You know, so and then, you know, if you're supposed to always be kind and nice, so what happens to anger? There's some truth to this. but in meditation, in Buddhist meditation, you're given complete permission to have murderous rage. Imagine once, you know, the one place in society, in life, where you can have murderous rage coursing through you. And it's okay because you've committed not to move. And, you know, you're sitting there, you're committed not to move. You're not going to act on it or do anything. You're just going to sit there and feel it. And it's quite a trip sometimes. Sometimes meditation is like the rodeo. And a successful period of meditation is you didn't leave your cushion. Because sometimes the emotions can be quite powerful. So in case that happens to you, don't say that your meditation is wrong or bad or you can't meditate. You're doing rodeo meditation. You're just sitting there and allowing these things move through. And it can be feel very pleasant sometimes when you relax enough and let the strong feeling just move and stream through you. It's the way we block it and resist it and hold it that's a problem. And then as you feel the energies moving through us, emotions want to unfold and resolve. They slowly begin to dissipate, strong, intense things. And they're not sustainable if you just feel them in your body and let them move through then and don't keep reinforce them with your story. So first is to recognize, then to allow, and then it's useful to name it if there's an easy, obvious label for it. You don't spend much time kind of figuring out the right label, just the obvious. And if there's no obvious thing, but you know you're having an emotion, just label it emotion. So you don't spend a lot of time analyzing. And then feel it in your body. Investigate it, be with it. See what sensations are manifesting in the body, what the energies are in your body. And see if you can hold it. Then you're doing mindfulness of the body meditation, as we talked about last time. Feel those sensations in your body and see how they unfold as they go along. And then when the emotion is no longer compelling, then we come back to the breathing. Does that make sense? Enough? Now for those of you who didn't make sense, or are concerned, or have protests, do you have any comments or questions you'd like to ask about that? So all the way in the outer hall again. Why don't you speak loudly and I'll repeat it.
Sure. I was just going to say that for me, my normal practice is to, you know, recognize it, allow it, and then just dissipate. So I guess if I change that third step to naming it.
And then feeling it.
Yeah.
So then the fourth step would be to feel it. Feel it physically in your body.
Okay. Because, you know, like I was telling you, I have a lot of painful, you know, physical feelings and, you know, emotional feelings. And so I try and stay away from them. So maybe that's not the right approach anymore.
Anymore. Might have been a right approach before, but maybe now you're ready for a different approach. Beautiful. Thank you.
Okay. I guess I feel like I'm still having trouble knowing the difference between feeling an emotion and then accepting it and moving on, and feeling it and kind of, like you said, like dismissing it. Because I think I'm feeling it in both senses, but how do you know when you've felt it enough that you can move on?
Well, you could experiment in meditation. You could experiment and just come back to your breath. And then if it's still tugging at you, then you need to go back to it. That's one way. Another way is to not be in a hurry. To say, well, you know, it's there, and it's easy enough to stay with it, or it seems like it's relevant. I'll just stay with it until it's really obvious I know it no longer needs me. And if it's not really obvious, I'll be content and just feel it and be with it. And that's maybe one way to protect yourself from being dismissive and leaving it too quickly.
So what if the thing that's tugging at you the most is thoughts or images, not emotions?
You're supposed to wait until next week to have those. Yeah, come back next week. And next week we'll talk about that very thing. So right behind, in the back, in the back, straight back behind him.
I just had a question about the labeling. It seems tricky because labels have a lot of connotations. So by labeling it, it changes it, at least personally. So if I try to label something, it's never what it just was.
If it gets too complicated with labels because of strong associations, then maybe don't use labeling.
Okay.
You don't need to. It's not required by any means. But it's supposed to be really simple, and labeling is not supposed to be a big thing. It's not like taking a sledgehammer on top of it and saying, like, you know, anger. Just a very simple kind of acknowledgement. What is interesting, though, as an exercise, is to maybe go through the dictionary or find a list of emotions and expand your emotional vocabulary. And so can you tell the difference? Do you know the difference between anger, irritation, annoyance, rage? What are some other ones like this? Ire?
Fury.
Fury. Wrath. What else? There must be more.
Resentment.
So begin seeing that actually there's a whole kind of range, and if you don't want to analyze and figure out, but if you're familiar, if you do an exercise outside of meditation and get more familiar with the different nuances of emotions, sometimes being more precise with the label helps with the acknowledgement. But if you're coming with all the guns firing when you know, just put it all away. Yes, up here. Oh, please, go ahead. No, you can go ahead.
Okay. Sometimes the feeling is so strong that I cannot name it. It's so powerful, there's no name. There's okay. All of those names you said there. And I cannot identify. Hold in and it doesn't come out. And I try to breathe and I try to rationalize. And I cannot solve the problem because not my problem, but affect me a lot. And yeah, sometimes I just cry to release, but there's no problem and there's no name. And now that you're saying, you said resentment. I think resentment kind of grabs more it. But it's anger, frustration, feeling that I'm being abused, all of that together.
Uh-huh. So you might not be an easy label. Another easy label to use as a backup is pleasant, unpleasant. This is whatever it is. I don't know what it is, but it's pleasant, or it's I don't know what it is, but it's unpleasant. And just something to help. Having a very simple label sometimes makes a little encouragement. It's also an encouragement to say, stay there with it. It's okay. Stay with it. Stay with it. Because sometimes you need a little pep talk in the mind to stay. It's okay. Stay. So pleasant or unpleasant. And then you feel it. Feel it. Feel it. And see what happens if you don't go into the story about why you were wronged or what the terrible things that happened. But just feel it. Feel it. Feel it. And some people are not willing to let resentment or anger go or let it dissolve, because then they think the sucker's going to get away with it. And the Buddha said, if you want to help your enemy, get angry. Because then you hurt yourself in a way that your enemy never could hurt you. Something in the back.
I'm very emotional and regularly feel my emotions, and I'm very connected to my body, but I can never tell where in my body my feelings are.
Really?
Ever. I always experience them in my head, which seems kind of counterintuitive.
So you say you're very much in your body, but your emotions are always in the head. What makes you say that you're in your body?
I experience things going on in my life physically.
Like what?
I feel tension. I feel physical impact.
Tension doesn't occur without emotion being part of it.
Right, but I can never. When I'm having a feeling, and you ask me where in my body it is, I haven't a clue.
So you're smiling right now, and I can see this glitter, delight in your eyes. Yeah. Can you feel that too?
Yeah.
In your smile?
Yeah, sure.
So your delight is, isn't that, aren't you feeling it in your face?
Well, that's because it's above the neck.
Oh! Yeah, there are people who don't feel anything below the neck, and there are people who feel nothing below their waist. People shut parts of their bodies off, sometimes for a very good reason. They've had trauma or some great difficulty, and they don't want to feel that anymore. I don't know if that's your case. Sounds like maybe not, but you heard the instructions are really simple, and it's very important. Mindfulness is meant to be really simple. So maybe these instructions sound like they may be complicated. You're supposed to do all this stuff. And if it's not obvious, don't worry about it. So you sit, be with your breath until something else is more compelling. And if it's clearly an emotion, then be with it as an emotion. If it's not, if you don't see it as an emotion because you're not, or if you see it as an emotion but it's all up in above your forehead, above your eyebrows, be content with that. Okay, you get to study eyebrow emotions, and you know what that's like. No second arrows, just that's how it is for you. Second arrow would be, I'm in California after the whole humanistic psychology movement. I should be be in my body and. That's more arrows, right? The idea is to be present for how it is, not how you think it should be. And so for you, it might be that when you sit down to meditate, it isn't an emotion in your body that gets your attention, but it might be tension. And so then you do tension meditation. And it's possible that as you stay with the tension, feel it in the body, that maybe at some point through the cracks of the tension, you might recognize an emotion that's there. But you don't go looking for the emotion. This meditation is not about looking for something per se. It's more like recognizing what's there. And if nothing needs to be recognized, stay with your breath. We're supposed to be, try to be relaxed, at ease. Don't make it this big project. But when things are obvious, we don't have to be struggling with it. Then we let relax and we turn toward that and include that as part of the meditation. So what we say in this meditation tradition here is that there's two kinds of meditation. There is exclusive meditations and inclusive meditations. Exclusive meditations are usually concentration practices where you concentrate only on one thing and you exclude everything else. So you might concentrate only on the breath or only on a mantra and everything else is kind of falls away. In this meditation here, we give emphasis on the breath, but not in an exclusive way. And we're actually in the inclusive school. And so whatever is occurring that's obvious and clear, we don't try to be in conflict with it, we don't try to push it away. We just bring the calm, meditative attention to welcome that or see that. This is how it is now. And keep it really simple. And when it's something in the body, then we do my meditation on the body. If it's emotion, we do it on emotion. But if you don't have emotions, don't worry about it. When you meditate, don't worry about it. Don't worry about anything. Except if you have worry, then notice that. But if you go a few years meditating and you don't have a single emotion whatsoever, and your friends are saying, you don't seem to have ever any emotions, then perhaps you should maybe go experiment a little bit with a psychotherapist and see, if some interesting, thing might come up. Keep it simple. And it's kind of a wonderful pleasure and relief to have a meditation, a hope, that allows everything to be there. Nothing needs to be excluded. And it means the full range of our life can be a source of wisdom and understanding. We are gathering all the information, and some people don't trust the full picture. And one of the goals, if there is a goal for this meditation practice, is to trust all the information that comes through our psychophysical being, so we can be wise and with that information. But so one more, and we'll stop.
Okay. I'm really feeling a realization. I'm wondering about the impulse, the very strong impulse we have to hold on to emotions, because that's really striking a true note for me. I'm feeling, as you were speaking about that, I was feeling a realization that I think I'm holding on to grief as a means of trying to hold on to the person I've lost.
Right.
And also holding on to many emotions generally, I feel, as a means of trying to maintain control.
Right.
Can you speak to that? And how do we get rid of that very strong impulse to try to maintain control in our lives by holding those emotions, even though that's detrimental?
Yeah. I would be very respectful of all this. Very respectful of holding on to grief and these things. There might be wisdom even operating there. I wouldn't necessarily automatically say this is wrong or bad to do it. In the meditation practice that we do, none of this is wrong. Meditation practice would be you would turn towards and feel the way that you're holding on to the grief. So you feel the grief, and you explore, you investigate a little bit, and you discover how you're holding on to it. You might even feel it physically, kind of tightening up or bracing yourself or something. And then you simply just bring your attention and be with that for a while and see what unfolds. And things will unfold on their own if you're quiet and calm and present and give it lots of time. Outside of meditation, you might want to give some thought. You might want to go talk to a friend, journal, talk to a therapist, and explore a little bit more fully what's going on with yourself around this. And there's probably really interesting things to understand about yourself and about emotions and even about your losses that would actually enrich your life if you spend some time getting to know and recognizing and getting under the surface of these things. And meditation might help with that, it's also fine to explore it other places too. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So, thank you very much. And so for next week, then we'll talk about mindfulness of thinking and imagery. If I don't talk about visualizing enough, you can get in my case. And thinking is also a very important part of life. And sometimes meditators are very dismissive or feel like thinking is the big enemy. But there's a beautiful way in which everything can be included. There's a very significant and meaningful way that thinking can be included as part of meditation that doesn't keep us caught in the world of thoughts. And so how to include without being caught in them is really the art. And how, so that's for next week. Thank you.